Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I was asked to address a youth group by Patit Pavan Prabhu, who is sick, is it? Diagnosed with COVID? No. Suspected, but isn't. It's some other kind of miserable disease, which means he can't come. And the title he gave was Friendship and Love, or Finding Friendship and Love in a Harsh Age. What is it? Look it up. Friendship and Love in a Harsh Age. And this is for the youth of Dubai, although it seems not everyone here is a youth at present. You're not a youth, are you? Gray hair means a little later you'll be a youth. Just have to change the present body, and you'll be a youth again if you get a human body, or if you get a body in the spiritual world. So, everyone here is either a youth, was a youth, either is a youth, or was a youth, and will be a youth again. So, youth program can be for everyone. And the subject is friendship and love in a harsh age, which suggests that we all want friendship and love, which should seem obvious. It also suggests that it seems to be a difficult thing to find in the present age, maybe especially for the youth of Dubai. That would seem to be the natural, that we have friendship and love. One thing, you might not be my friend or love me if I say this, but please put your damn phone away and just listen. Excuse me for the unparliamentary language. If you want to take a photo, please take it later after the talk. And if you want to make a recording, don't. You can get it on the internet a little later. Okay? So, we all want friendship and love, and we would expect to get that. It shouldn't be something that you have to work on. Isn't it? It's something that should be just accepted. There are all these seminars on how to be a success, how to develop your personality, how to, so many things, how to communicate better with others, how to be a good public speaker, how to pass your exams, all kind of seminars, but we don't usually, well, maybe there are. Actually, there was a famous book, wasn't there? How to Win Friends and Influence People. Who is that by? Carnegie, which Carnegie? Dale Carnegie. Right, how to win. You see the title, How to Win Friends and Influence People. The idea is you make friends and you use that to influence people. So it's not really making friends, is it? It's more about influencing people. There's a lot in this harsh age, there's a lot of misleading information about how we care for others. Just like, where was that? I was in an airport. Yeah, we were in there. Was it in some airport or other? The sign, some airline had the sign, "Your safety is our utmost concern." It's not. It's your money is our utmost concern. Everyone knows that. It's not that the company is formed with the idea of your safety in mind. And even if they do have your safety, even if our safety is a high priority, it's because they want to keep they want to keep the people coming on their airlines, not like SpiceJet. I guess no one wants to fly SpiceJet these days because they keep on having problems, pretty serious problems. Maybe someone did some black magic on them, but technological people don't believe in things like that. How to find friendship. Yeah, even there, how to win friends. When was that book written? In 1940s, was it? Anyone know? Look it up on the internet. Although your phone's put away, so you can't do that.
Huh?
Late 1930s, it was already an issue, how to win friends. And already, in the title of the book, we can find the clue as to why people need some guidance as how to win friends, because they're thinking of interacting with people in a way that they can influence them for their own ends. And you don't get friends if you're like that. Or a friend means, in that case, a friend means an ally, or someone who you can pretend to like so that you can manipulate them. But that's not real friend. That's friendship minus love. So when we say friendship and love, real friendship is based on love. And love is not such an easy thing as you might presume from Bollywood, if you waste your life by watching Bollywood films. How do I know about Bollywood? What do? I get up in the middle of the night and secretly watch Bollywood movies. There you go. It's recorded on YouTube now. But it's just being in India for all these years, and it's like in the atmosphere almost. So, yeah, love, it's an easy word to say. It comes very easily, or it's just automatic, it would seem, for mothers toward their children. Is that right, mothers? All the mothers? Why do you love your children? There's no answer for that. That is love when there's no answer for why you love. If there's a reason why you love, then it's not love, right? But then why do we love Krishna? Well, we say Krishna's so kind, he's so merciful, he's so beautiful, he's so loving, he's lovable. Therefore we love Krishna. But it could be that the mothers don't love the children. I've seen that. You don't see it much in India, but you definitely see it in the West, that the mother, they themselves have so many, they're so stressed out and have psychological problems. Where are you from, by the way, the fellow white skin over there? You're from Croatia. And you're also Hrvatski, Slovenia. We used to be the same country. Before you were born, when you were young. It was all Yugoslavia, remember? Yeah, ex-Yugoslavia. So, it's not really the West, but it's getting there as fast as it can. So I see, it's very common that in the Western countries, the mothers, drug addiction, alcoholism, or just being so stressed, single mothers, and they just, it's too much to handle some child, and a baby's a big bundle of trouble, isn't it? But you love them. You love that trouble. It comes naturally. It should come naturally. And if children are raised in an atmosphere of love, then naturally they will tend to be loving. So it should be there automatically in the culture. But we're talking about a harsh age. Of course, the word harsh in Sanskrit and Hindi has an almost opposite meaning. It means like happiness. More or less, it means happiness. But in English, it means How would you say that then in Kotorna? Quite right. How would you, I'm telling you how to say it in Hindi. It's something like Karkash Kator, something like that. Kasht, yeah, similar words. Nothing very nice. It's a harsh age. Harshness gives a connotation of cruelness or just lack of love. Dealings between people are unpleasant, uncaring. Actually, the whole material world is like that, but especially in Kali Yuga. In Kali Yuga, everything good goes down day by day. Tatascanudinam dharma satyam shocham shamadaya kalena balinara janang shantayur balang smritihi. There's a chapter in the Srimad Bhagavatam which is begun with this verse in which Shukadeva Goswami says that to Maharaj Parikshit that thereafter, which means after the onset of Kali Yuga, with the passing of every day, that's a harsh sound. Sounds can be harsh. Crows sound, wah, wah, caw, caw. That's harsh. And then we have the minor bird sounds nice. There's so many nice sounding birds. Anyway. With the passing of every day in Kali Yuga, dharma decreases, truthfulness decreases, cleanliness decreases, satyam, shocham, ksham, the ability to tolerate decreases, compassion decreases, lifespan decreases. Bodily strength decreases and mental strength decreases. Memory power decreases. So Kali Yuga is an age of harshness. Love on one side, love on the other side, harshness. Harshness, how is that increasing? And how is it opposite to love? Love means when we interact with others not for our sake, but for their sake. And that's mother's love. It's not only in humans. We find in the cats and the dogs and even the lions who are very harsh to other creatures. But they're very kind to their own children. So acting for the benefit of others, even in the case of the mother, she is not going to get back from the child. It's not a calculation, because the child can't do anything for the parents. Of course, when the parents get old, then the children are expected, in Indian culture at least, to serve the elderly parents. But in the beginning, it's one way. The children have nothing to materially to give the parents, and the parents are giving everything to the children. Harshness arises, or the whole atmosphere becomes harsh, when the whole society is permeated by thoughts of me, I, me, and mine. What do I get for myself? What is in it for me? How can I enjoy? My main business in life is how I can enjoy. And that is prominent in the consumer society, because the society runs on at the moment. What is the underlying motto of society? Is get money and then enjoy yourself. That is the underlying motto. And here in this city we see all the advertisements are aimed at spending your money for things that you can enjoy. And of course the people who are making the advertisements, they are trying to proffer things that you can enjoy so they can get money from you. And with that money, the people who want to make money from you, they have the idea that, well, I will enjoy. So what goes on in the name of love and friendship in the present age is people pretending to like each other, but they don't. Sit properly. Have you heard that? Prabhupada's tape. Well, the first thing is sit down and shut up. I'm saying it with love and friendship. If you happen to know the title. I'm trying not to be too harsh here. So the whole atmosphere becomes harsh because everyone thinks in terms of my enjoyment. So instead of smoothly blending, everyone blending with each other, any help that you, even if you do help others, it's all calculated. What will I get back? And my main interest is in how I can enjoy. And by that propaganda all the time, how I can enjoy, how I can enjoy, how I can enjoy. And all the arrangements for that, that people become very disturbed if there's even a little impingement on their sense enjoyment. Just like here we have arrangement for air conditioning everywhere. I was just discussing with some of our devotees in India just before I left about making arrangements for guest houses at our farms. I'm overseeing a few farm communities in which the devotees who live there get ready for a shock. They don't have electrical connections, which means no fans in the summer and no geysers for hot water in the winter, no running water in taps. They do have tube well, pump tube wells like this. That's a concession. They don't have that, but they're saying for the guest houses, you at least have to have electric lights and fans, otherwise no one will want to stay. They'll come and look and say, very nice, but they won't, they may stay a few hours, but they're not going to stay. So if we want people to come for 2 or 3 days, we have to have minimal arrangement for that. But then when I thought, well, I first came to India about 45 years ago, and most places there was no electrical current anywhere. And even where there were electric lines, there wasn't any electricity in them. And even when the electricity came, it was on such low voltage that it wasn't much help. You put on the electric light, but you still need a kerosene lamp to see anything more than one step in front of you. But in one generation, or maybe there's two generations, people have become so much accustomed to what we, in my childhood, we used to call modcons, modern conveniences. Because even there in England, to have such things was considered very modern. And we used to hear in America, everyone has color television. And here in England, we only have black and white televisions. And gradually, you never even heard what a black and white television is. You used to have probably as a child in Yugoslavia, you had black and white televisions. And then it was a great step forward to have color televisions. Now we're catching up with the Americans. So modcons, modern conveniences. And in one or two generations, the Indians whose grandparents just took it for granted that we don't have electricity. They had fans. Sure, they had fans. Hand fans. And more likely you'd fan someone else. You'd fan your father while he's taking his meal, something like this. So in one generation, Indian people... Oh, and of course, toilets. There has to be... toilets. Otherwise, there were fields. There still are fields. But no one wants to go in the field anymore. This is considered uncivil. Actually, still a lot of people. I travel throughout India, and still a lot of people. Even they have toilets, but they prefer to go in the field. It has its ecological advantages also. The pigs like it. Actually, it's a problem. What happened is the people in the villages stopped passing stool in the fields, so the pigs don't get the food, and so the pigs come and eat their crops. So it became a problem. You solve one problem, supposed problem, and you make another problem. That's material life. Anyway, what I'm talking about is that people are so accustomed to so many arrangements for convenience, they become very disturbed if there's even a little. The electricity goes off. It doesn't go off here, I don't think. Still in India, many places, it goes off for some time. Srila Prabhupada was in New York City, I think it was 1965. And there was an electric blackout for a few hours. And Prabhupada, chanting Hare Krishna, is just like that. He was surprised because he didn't expect it in America, but you know, just chant Hare Krishna. Not a big thing, he's used to it. But you can still look it up in Wikipedia, blackout in New York in 1965. Like, you won't find it blackout in Israel. Then you'd have to have 20 million Wikipedia entries if you have every blackout in every town in India. Or you might have one, electricity came on. It's unusual. The electricity came on. People get so disturbed by something which shouldn't really be disturbing. So we can see it's a harsh age in which people have very high expectations of enjoyment, which you get through the mass media and these advertisements everywhere. It's like harassment. You're constantly, it's being bombarded with all this, buy this, do this, go on skiing in the desert and all kinds of... Like all the time trying to grab your attention. So it's another kind of stress that people are all the time being harassed by all these things, all the things you're supposed to do to make you happy. And high expectation of happiness, because that's what they show, that they show all these happy, good-looking, wealthy people in the advertisements. In the meantime, you're unhappy, not good-looking, not wealthy, and you want to be like that, but you're not. And actually the people who are actually good looking and wealthy, they're not happy either. That's not just in this age, but that's going on since time immemorial. The myth that you will be happy by having lots of money and having a big position and being famous, but it's just not true. And anyone who thinks about it even a little can understand it's not true, but still it just goes on all over the world since time. It goes on and it'll continue to go on, and it's called Maya, the illusion that we can be happy by material enjoyment. So in Vedic society, there's a sense of dharma. Or in any society throughout the world, prior to the modern age, a strong sense of religiosity. Now in Europe, it's intellectuals talk of post-Christian Europe. Have you heard that term? Post-Christian Europe. It means Europe's no longer Christian as it used to be. Slovenia, Croatia still strongly identifies with Catholicism as part of their national identity, but they're not really very religious. Is that right? It's the same in Russia. They're trying to promote the Russian Orthodox Church. They're not really much interested in religion, but it goes well with power. If you can, and the sense of being Croatian is very important for the Croatians, because they don't want to be under the Serbs, or who have they been under? Serbs and Austrians, Austro-Hungary, and then the Ottoman Empire. They got their so-called independence after hundreds of years, and then within a few years they sold everything off to the Germans. So Croatia, anyway, it's politically supposedly independent, but it's economically not independent. And anyway, they joined the European Union, which means you can't do what you like anyway. So, but there's this, anyway, I'm getting off topic a little bit here, but the point is that Europe is generally, there's this saying post-Christian Europe. And in America, there's a whole cultural divide between the strong Christian lobby and then the rest. So they're still hanging on to Christianity in America. But the pervading sense of religiosity used to be there all over the Western world. Christianity. It's still very strong in the Islamic world. Pervading sense of religion. I don't know how long that can go on with the bombardment of materialism and consumerism, and how well it goes with religiosity, and the effect of Darwinistic and other atheistic theories being taught, which they're not taught here. But even if they're not directly taught in the schools, the influence is there. Of the idea that we're just all chemicals. Life, what is life? What is life? It's just a combination of chemicals. So in so many ways, the atheism or just plain materialism is at the root of society. I went to a nominally Catholic school, Roman Catholic school. I was also a Catholic. But no one ever talked about God, and we weren't atheistic, but we just didn't have any interest in religion whatsoever. It just wasn't a subject. It wasn't anything to think about or talk about. It just didn't exist for us, religion. Well, it did. We used to have an assembly every morning in which there's supposed to be something talked about religion. And I must admit, although I sat through hours, every morning you had to sit through it, but I don't remember anything that was said in all those talks, because for us it was just a ritual, and we weren't against religion, because it wasn't a significant enough factor in our life that we felt that we had to be against it. Do you get what I'm going to get at? It was just a non-subject. Just like how many of you are interested in the latest research into mollusks on the surface of the bottom of the sea in the English Channel? How often do you discuss that? It's just not a topic of any interest. I don't even know if there are any mollusks on the bottom of the English Channel, but whether they are or not, it's just not a subject of discussion. And it's just nothing of interest. So we live in an age which is, whether we are aware of it or not, it is strongly influenced by atheism. And although there is a strong movement to promote atheism, that kind of atheism is going on, even among people who are nominally religious. They may identify as Christians or Muslims or Hindus or whatever, but if we really believe there's God, then we'd be a lot more serious about it than we actually are. And we wouldn't be very interested in making lots of money and getting a prestigious position and enjoying ourselves with skiing in the desert and ice creams and whatever the latest thing is on Netflix, and it just wouldn't appeal to us because it's just all insignificant in relation to our relationship with God. So we live in an age which is forgetting God, because friendship and love ultimately comes from God, the Supreme Person. Friendship and love means personal interaction. That should be obvious, isn't it? Should be obvious. But there are people who talk about love, love, love. It's just some idea, love. But actually, yes, I have this feeling of love for everybody. But real love means interacting with people. And it's not all just smiling, and a lot of hard work. Literally, family life, you can talk about love, but what is actually there is a lot of hard work, a lot of commitment, a lot of sacrifice, and that's where the love comes from. Because if we think, well, I just want what I want, then there's no love, because love means giving. Without desire for personal return. So that is coming from Krishna. Krishna is the source of all love. And real religion means to love God. And if we put Krishna in the center of our lives, then automatically we will have a sense of love toward all living beings, understanding all living beings to be related with Krishna. Real love and real friendship can be on the basis of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, even the love in this world, even though it may be so strong that a person can give their life for the sake of that love. So many people are giving their life for love of their country right now in Ukraine. They're giving their life for the love of their country. But it's a misplaced love, because you might love your country so much, I'm a Ukrainian, I will die for Ukraine, and then you end up thinking of those Russians who you don't like, and then you end up getting born in Russia because your last thought is Russia, and then you end up getting born in Russia, and then maybe when you grow up you'll be fighting against Ukraine. Same thing, India, Pakistan. Someone's fighting for India thinking, he's dying, some Pakistani terrorist or whatever shot him. He's dying thinking how he's hates the Pakistanis, then he'll get born in Pakistan. Because yang yang vapisran bhavam tyajyante kalevaram. You're nodding your head. Do you know this verse? Say the rest. Tadad. Tad tad. Anyone? Tam tam evaiti konteya sada tad bhava bhavitaha. Whatever we think of at the time of death, that shapes our next life. So even friendship and love may be very developed in this world to the extent that we can give our life for others for the sake of our country. Or the mother gives her time, attention, and all her own personal happiness for the sake of the child. But it doesn't last, because mrityu sarvaharaschaham, everything is taken away by death. And even I was talking about, I've seen women in the Western world who they just can't handle their children, and they scold their children a lot, and then the child is crying and bewildered because they're looking for love, but all they get from the mother is harshness. But the mother is completely unprepared to have a child, because she's lived her whole life thinking, what, me, 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 me. And then all of a sudden a child comes along, and the child is going screaming, which means me, 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 me. And the mother is not prepared to sacrifice for that. But even if we do have a very strong love, that is temporary. That won't last. So what we're really looking for, everyone, everywhere, is looking for real friendship and real love. And everyone is ultimately looking for Krishna. Because real friendship and real love is possible with Krishna in the center. So this harsh age, it may be good in some ways, because at least we stop to think that I'm looking for, I want friendship and love, but it's so hard to get it. What do I have to do? Where do I have to go? What adjustment do I have to make? And the ultimate answer is we have to come to Krishna. And that love which is there materially, that can also be a bewilderment, because we think it's all in all. If people are living relatively happily in a not very harsh environment, they may feel so satisfied in their situation that they don't realize, well, I have to die and get born and die again and get born again. So even though love in this material world is definitely much better than hatred in this material world, it can also be one kind of illusion, because we tend to think that, well, if I'm happy now, then we don't think that, well, I have to die. I don't know where I'm going to be born, and it's just going to be suffering life after life after life. We don't think like that. And therefore, that love, material love, can be a source of our downfall, or our failure to utilize human life for the sake of developing Krishna consciousness. So what does that mean? Then we should stop all family love? No, but redirect it to Krishna. Put Krishna in the center. Family life, yes, very good. Look after your children, be happy. Wife, husband, all together. Nowadays we think of family, what do we think? Hum do, hamare do. That's not family. Family means living, brothers live together with their parents, maybe, and grandparents. Extended family used to mean a big thing, right? So many. And now it's hamdo hamare do. They made it less, just a small number. So you don't have to bother about all those old people and what a headache, I can't enjoy myself. Send them. Now they have the Vridha Ashram. The old, if you have enough money, you can pay to send your parents away to get locked up and they can die there. And in the good socialist countries like Yugoslavia used to be, and they have all facilities for all old people to die, just locked up, away from everyone else. You don't see them, you don't hear from them. You might go and visit them once a month or something, but you're not interested in them because they're old and they can't offer you any sense gratification. Old people are just as troublesome as children, but they're not cute. In fact, they can be scary. If you think, well, phew, I'm going to be like that too soon. So the modern solution is to send them away and lock them up in an old person's prison, which they call, what do they call it? Care home or something like that. And old age home, care home, something like that. And to be fair, those who are working in those homes, they're often very selfless people. It's not that they have an attitude necessarily of being nasty or anything. They do. I know because my father, who died recently at the age of 95, spent the last few months of his life in one of those places. And I heard the reports from one of my disciples in England who happened to work in the same place, and his daughter also works in the same place, that they... and from my stepmother, who used to visit him, that actually the staff there, they do their best to look after the older people. But still, it's the same. We don't have in the Western world the culture of looking after old people. They're just something to send away. We don't know how to handle it because they don't offer any sense gratification. But having old people around us can be very educational because the old people, if they haven't spent their whole life watching Netflix, are supposed to be somewhat wise and can tell us things which are good for us, which are good for us to follow. And it's also just like Srila Prabhupada, when he was lying on a bed in Vrindavan in old age, in the last few years of his presence in this world, going through the pastime of being apparently sick, he told us, don't think that this will not happen to you. So it's very educational. We should see that now I have a healthy body. I'm going to end up like this too, most likely. Krishna's famous first instruction in Bhagavad Gita, Dehino Sminyata Dehe Komarang Yovanang Jaratata Dehantara Praptihi Dhiras Tatra Namuhyati. We go from childhood to youth to old age and then death. And a sober person is not bewildered seeing, well, especially talking about the last change by death. Now, in a normal society, people see this all the time, right in their home. There's the child, the youth, the middle age, the old age, and death is very common in the village or in the town because old people are at home and they die at home. So it's not something that we theoretically, you have to get a diorama and see the diorama of the changing bodies, but you just see it all the time. It's more realistic. So we should realize that now I'm young, I'm going to die soon. Or now I'm old and I'm going to die even sooner than I might have thought when I was young. Then again, I'll get another body. Wait a minute, I don't have to take another body. It's a sad situation where we have to think, we have to have talks about how we can get friendship and love. Sad situation. But this much we should know, that friendship and love can properly develop on the basis of that which is eternal friendship and love. Nasato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sataha, that which is eternal. The body won't stay. The soul is eternal. So let us develop relationships on the basis of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, trying to get friendship and love on the basis of some psychological adjustment. I speak to you like this. I praise you and then you like it. And then you praise me. There are all kinds of ideas. Because people don't have a sense of dharma, they have to make up or imagine how they can live peacefully in this world. Just like there's this idea, well, you just, everything's okay and you just tolerate everything and everyone, and if you want to believe in abortion, that's okay, and if you don't want to, that's okay, and it's your business, it's not my business. So that sounds like a good formula for getting on in the world, doesn't it, right? Whatever you believe, whatever you like, you believe it, and that's okay, and I'll believe what I like, and I won't bother you, and you won't bother me. But there's a problem there, just using the case of abortion, because abortion is highly sinful. And it's not being friendly to others to pretend that it's not highly sinful. Now, in modern India, people don't think it's highly sinful. They used to think it's highly sinful, but by manipulation of people's thought processes, the idea that abortion is not only okay, but it's a good thing for keeping the population down, that's completely the... So we may think, well, just if someone, if they believe in abortion and they want to send their wife for an abortion, well, it's okay. What? Why should I bother? This creates an atmosphere of sinfulness. Where is the friendship? Where is the love? Love should be on the basis of knowledge that we are all living beings, souls, part and parcel of Krishna. Love of Krishna begins with obedience to Krishna's rules, which in this world are known as dharma. Love is actually something very high. First comes obedience. People want to talk about and think about love, but first comes discipline, self-discipline. Being a human, there's this company which makes t-shirts called Being Human. Being human is a lot more than wearing a t-shirt. It's really a lot of hard work, especially in the modern age in which people, the whole atmosphere is to make people like animals, simply interested in their senses. To be a human means to rise above that platform of sensuality. So really this Krishna consciousness movement is teaching people, first, we're talking about love of God, which is a very high platform. But the beginning is just at least to be a human being. Civilized human being means there's no meat eating, no illicit sex. Love is often misunderstood as sex. But no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication, and life dedicated to Krishna. That's the beginning of human life. And on that platform, actual love and friendship can develop. Otherwise, the love and friendship which we experience in a materialistic culture, it's going to be very shallow, because everything in the modern age, this harsh age, is very shallow. What people say, buy this product. They don't care for us. Even the person who's selling us the product doesn't care for the product. They're only selling it so they can get some money. No one cares for anyone, and the so-called care for others, concern for others, it's money is at the basis in so many cases. If you can get beyond that, that's a step toward being human. How to get love and friendship in this age? Well, even if you do get love and friendship, well, without Krishna consciousness, what's the point? Because even the dogs and cats have some kind of love and friendship between them. But it's all temporary and incomplete and imperfect. So why not go for the real love and friendship, which is lasting, which means in relation to Krishna? There are a few ideas thrown out here and there, not a very structured talk, but some thoughts for you to think about. And the real thing is just to realize that anyway, we're looking for love and friendship. It means ultimately we're looking for happiness. Happiness doesn't come from having the latest phone or watching the latest movie or the latest reel. Happiness means love. Love is something very deep. Love means commitment. Permanent, eternal. That is possible with Krishna. Hare Krishna, thank you for listening so long. It's a great achievement for youth in this harsh age to sit without jumping up and watching a reel or just to keep the attention so long. Yes, you can pull out your phone. You have all permission to pull out your phone now. Tapasya. Hare Krishna program means tapasya. Yes, if you like, you can take photos as you like. Thank you very much for listening. Hare Krishna. Does anyone have any question, objection, whatever? Question? Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you so much for those profound insights on friendship and love in this harsh age. One of the questions that was running in my mind is, when we see in the scriptures some of these examples of friendships, like in Ramayana, Sugriva made a friendship pact with Rama and he did not...
Sugriva made a friendship pact with Rama. It was on the basis of what Sugriva could get. Is that where your question is coming from?
Yeah, was it more of a political ally?
It was a political ally, but the fact is that Ram, who is Ram? Ramante yogino nante sattananda chidatmani iti ramapade na so param brahma vidhiyate. Ram is the absolute truth, the reservoir of all pleasure. And if we approach Ram even for materialistic purpose, then our pure love for him can develop, as indicated in Bhagavad Gita. Chatur vidha bhajante maam jana sukritin arjuna arto jignyasur artarti jnani cha bharatarshaba. Four kinds of people approach me, says Krishna. One of them is the artarti. So Sugriva could generally be put under the category of artarti. He wanted some material gain. But he got Ram. Generally, among all the Vanaras, we praise Hanuman, because Hanuman, from the outset, was selfless. I said that about the phone too early because we're having the question and answer session now.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances at your lotus feet. Thank you for the wonderful class. Maharaj, just had a query that when we discuss about love and friendship, that can be applicable to a greater extent in devotee association. But what about when we go outside and deal with the outside people? We show that love and affection, but like, how much can we show? Because they are ready to exploit us.
Yeah, so be careful. Be very careful.
So how much to show that, like, we should show to them or...
21.37 recurring percent. How can you say exactly? In dealing with materialistic people, we should deal with them in a manner that is polite and friendly, and as far as is practical, in a manner that may help them come to Krishna. But you can't always do that. Just like if you go in a shop, just yesterday, what did we buy in the shop yesterday? Was it yesterday? We bought two things. One thing was shoe insoles. What was the other thing? A bag. And we bought a watch. That was the day before. I went shopping in Dubai. So, yeah, you interact with the people in the shop, but there's nothing much there. And it's all stereotyped interactions. They don't want you to be very friendly. It's just not part of the way you, it's just not part of the way you deal with people. So it's all very formal. You might as well deal with a robot, and maybe in 5 years it will be a robot that you deal with in the shop.
Thank you, Maharaj. Thank you, Maharaj.
But the point I said is, it's, you can't exactly explain, but we try to interact with others in such a way that we don't get entangled, and if possible, we can give them something of Krishna consciousness also. Dressing in Vaishnava dress is very helpful. It's maybe not so practical in this country, but in most countries of the world, it is quite possible to go around dressed in Vaishnava dress, and then people say to you, oh, you're a Buddhist, mostly. Or if you're in Gujarat, or here just now at the bottom of the lift, someone said, Swami Narayana. So then we say, Hare Krishna. So you get an opportunity to say, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj. Thank you for... So basically we can deal in a modest possible way, humble way, and go ahead with our life.
Humble, yeah, but not so that you're going to be, as you use the word, exploited. Yeah. You have to be a little...
intelligent.
Hoshiar also.
Intelligent.
How to act in this world.
Thank you, Maharaj. Thank you, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Thank you for a wonderful lecture.
Okay, three people have said that now. That's enough. If anyone has any more questions...
I'm grateful to hear
it's
your...
It's like a formality to say that. Okay, what's the question?
It was from my heart because I got it so much.
Okay, thank you
to think
very
about
much.
It. I would like to ask you regarding... to think about to go home back to Godhead in this lifetime, even though I'm even in a beginning stage in my relationship to Krishna. So how much of possibility is there for me? Or, you know, because...
Everyone can become fully Krishna conscious in a moment, or it may take millions of lifetimes. Is it possible? Yes. To go back home back to Godhead in one lifetime, is it possible? We have to surrender to Krishna. But at least make a start. And do the very best we can. Do the very best we can. Labdva sudurlabham idang bahu sambhavante manusham artadam anityam api hadhira turnam yatetanapatedanumritya yava nishrayasya Vishaya kalu sarvata syat. Can anyone give the translation? Some of my disciples should be able to, because I quote this verse at least once a week in talks. Any of you without looking it up? Yeah. Okay. Say it in the mic. Yeah, okay. Exact, there's no exact translation. Labdva sudurlabhamidam. Very important verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Hare Krishna. So I'll try with your mercy, Maharaj. So it's labdva sudurlabham idam bahu sambhavante. It's very rarely obtained, the human...
The human life is very, very rarely obtained.
And at the same time, although it's temporary, yet it has great...
But now we have it.
Yeah, now we have it. And yeah. Although it's temporary, yet it's very substantial. And... and the pleasures, which the commonly available pleasures are there, and it can drop dead at any moment.
Yeah. The human life is very valuable, but it's also very short.
Turnam yate. And
turnam.
What
does that word mean, turnam? Means turant.
Anytime, like it's in the translation.
It means quickly. We should quickly, knowing that this body is temporary, we should quickly do whatever is required that we don't get born again.
And
understanding that sense pleasure is available in every species of life. Yeah. That's from Srimad Bhagavatam. Now we have the human life. It doesn't last long. It's very valuable because it affords the opportunity for self-realization. Sense gratification is available in every species of life. So knowing that this life will not last very long, we should quickly do whatever is required before we die again so that we don't get born again. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam. You want to be very serious about going back home, back to Godhead, you have to read all of Srila Prabhupada's books. Have you read some of the books? Which books? More or less all of them. Good. So read them. Go on reading. It's very, very helpful. You read in English, is it? Mm. They're hardly available in Slovenia, not much. They're working on it. I don't know exactly. You can look it up. It's in the 11th canto somewhere. It's in Krishna's teachings to Uddhava, in the 11th canto. If you like, you could be in touch with Ananta Sarovara Mataji. She's in the translation team also. And she's Slovenian devotee for many years. She's your god sister, so all right. You know her very well.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj, like you mentioned in the class, the real friendship and love exists with Krishna, and we focus our attention on it rather than the temporary material friendship and love, even if we get it. But personally, I have a small doubt, Maharaj. In process, it's not so, in the sense, like, you know, if there's a friend, you can just pick the phone and call him. But when we are trying to revive that with Krishna, it's, although we hear, you know, Krishna...
You can't call up Krishna.
Yeah, I mean...
You can. Okay. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. We're waiting for him to pick it up. He's picking it up. He's hearing.
Yes, Maharaj. Yeah.
Friendship with devotees.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. I have one question, Maharaj. During one class, I got this question. I was not able to answer it, so I thought I'll check it with Maharaj. Actually, the people who died on a road accident, like how their soul... leave this body, like the Yamaduta comes or the Vishnu.
How does it leave the body? How did it leave the body?
Yeah, Maharaj. Or the
what do you mean? How does it leave?
Or that it's according to the karmic reaction, or whether the Yamaduta comes or the Vishnu Duta comes to take.
Well, that depends on what they did. Generally, the people who are going to be taken by the Vishnu Dutas don't die in road accidents. They may do. Generally, they'll be dragged out by the Yamadutas. It's not something we want to talk about too much after sunset, but those who die sudden, violent deaths usually hang around in subtle bodies. Enough said for now.
Thank you.
Anyone else?